Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. BlessYouBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball and beyond on occasion. I am your host, Brandon Day. I'm a staff writer and editor at Bless You Boys. And with me is my co-host, Ashley McLennan, who is also a staff writer and editor of the Bless You Boys site. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I was going to go into like all your other ventures just to irritate you, and then I decided
it takes too long. We'd be here all day. Just let's just roll with what we got.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be all like Daenerys Stormborn's titles that we're just going to list out for you.
My delightful mother of dragons moniker. Yeah, that would be good. I like that. I should just keep adding things to it. But no, if you really want to see the list, you can go to my Twitter profile.
Yeah, it wasn't enough to be a writer and to have a real job and then to write for three different team sites, but now you have a YouTube channel.
So it's like, yeah, it's not live yet, but I've recorded my intro episode and my first two episodes. So if you really want to know all about runs and strikes and also what the divisions are, you can really look forward to those in the first two episodes.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I am curious to see how you do it. Yeah, because it's going to be all kinds of like the basics at first and stuff. And that,
yeah cool. I'm going to try to shake things up. Like, I was going to just follow along with the stuff that we'd written about in some of our basic intro to stats articles. So I basically took the beginning of our first intro to stats piece about how to read a box score and kind of picked that apart for YouTube. And then I'm like, oh, let's not get too into it because I'm recording this at 1 a.m. What's something I can make a quick, you know, 5 to 10 minute episode out of? And I'm like, divisions. Oh, sure. Yeah. People will need those explained to them. So I did an episode on, like, you know, the NL versus the AL and when they were established and kind of the differences and then which teams are in which division and a little bit of a breakdown of the postseason. Very light.
But. Oh, yeah. Just like the addition of like the divisional round and then the wild card. And
yeah, I talked a little bit like how it's broken down into the three sections. You get the DS series and the championship series and I do know the division series is what DS stands for in case somebody out there is like, fake fan.
yeah, so the division. Someone is always out there lurking, waiting yeah. to jump on someone.
Championship series and then the actual World Series, so. And then I did mock it a little bit, saying that it's called a World Series, but it's all American teams except for one.
That's because we're number one.
And the entire time I'm wearing a Toronto Blue Jays shirt, by the way, which nobody will notice, but it's definitely.
Well, I know. And we've had a lot of fun, like, postulating a Nippon League team coming over and swiping up Bryce Harper for, like, $50 million for one season just for fun, you know, just kind of for a barnstorming tour. And I would love that idea.
Like a Cecil Fielder year abroad. I would love to see it. Somebody else pointed out that it really wouldn't be fair to have him in one of the Korean or Japanese leagues because they're actually a little further ahead in their spring training. I guess it's winter training there because they're Southern Hemisphere, right?
No.
So it's a different season there.
No, they're all still Northern. Korea and Japan, yeah. Actually, they're pretty much the same latitude as us, I think.
Are they really? Oh my god, geography was not my strong suit. Apologies.
That's all right. We actually we missed a geography question in the weekly trivia thing that a bunch of like people I go to work or I work with, we all go out to this bar and play trivia one night a week. And we missed a geography question, so me and my buddy at work have just been obsessively like restudying all of our geography. So I'm pretty Amazing. Sharp right now. I'm ready for any geography questions if anybody has them.
I had a bunch of friends come out to my cabin for this weekend because it is actually still a Canadian long weekend in spite of us not having presidents. So it's family day so that we all get a February holiday. Or in the case of Manitoba where I live, it is Louis Riel Day, who is a Grand Métis champion. Get your Wikipedias out, everyone. Louis Riel. But I have friends come out every weekend. We've been doing it for about 6 years and we played this ridiculous game called Things, which is kind of just like you are given a card with a list of words on it and you have to describe the word without using it, which I guess is kind of like Scattergories or one of those other ones, but it's just a list and you have to make people guess the words on your card.
Oh, yeah. And
for some reason, it was uproariously funny. So give people enough alcohol and childish card games and it's good weekend all around.
Oh, yeah. Was this the source of the outdoor bonfire that I felt like was mocking us Midwesterners? We're like in the middle of winter. All I see is like complaints everywhere from friends. Everybody's just whining about the weather. And then I like up in Winnipeg, you know, meanwhile in Winnipeg and you guys are all like out in the backyard having a fire and standing around outside.
Yeah, like, we had a fire going and then we did like a 6.5 kilometer walk, which I don't know, divide that by 1.6. How does that work? I don't know. like a 4 mile walk? Question mark. I don't know. It was good though. We had fun. We went hiking in the woods and had the dogs out, and yeah, it's always a good time.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, the dogs must love it.
Nobody got
treated
this time. That's the other thing. Last time we had them out last year, I'm pretty sure it was the same time the Rays executed two very late night, like 9 p.m. Saturday night trades.
Yep.
I don't even remember who it was at this point, because I know Dickerson was DFA'd, but like, it was two very big players, and I was drunk as a skunk in front of a fire trying to figure out how to get these stories like posted. And I'm like, why would you do this to me now, Eric Neander?
Oh, yep. And they're like trying to write in the most simple language possible just so that I'm careful and like don't say anything I shouldn't.
Yeah, just like coordinating other people to write it who are still sober. Panicking in my kitchen, going, why would they do this to me now? So I was the whole weekend expecting that, of course, this would be when Bryce and Manny moved, even though I didn't have to write about it. I'm just like, history has told me that if I'm having fun with friends, somebody's going to get traded.
Yes, this is when it all goes down. Well, you know, shout out to Lookout Landing over there covering the Mariners. Because, yeah, they probably deal with that constantly with DePoto.
Oh, my God. They probably got to like make sure that one editor's always on.
People just wake up in a shock in the middle of the night and just start writing up a trade article, you know, that isn't even happening.
Probably have pre-writes done for every single player on the team.
That's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Now that I've said that. That is like my editor brain's like, wait, why don't we have that?
Maybe we should do that. Yeah, like obituaries for literally everyone who's ever played for the Tigers. Like, yeah, just all set to go.
All prepped and ready.
Yeah. So we have baseball now, but I don't know about you, but I've been kind of just like easing in slowly this year because I've had a tendency since I started writing about the game to like just go nuts. Like, you know, as soon as pitchers and catchers report, I'm cranking out articles left and right and breaking everything down. And like, by the time we get to March, there's like little left to say. So we're trying to just like ease into it. I had a nice chill weekend watching my sister's dog and just staying inside for the most part and goofing around. So we're just kind of like letting it unfold slowly. Like we're getting a steady influx of Guardiisms from him being on the field. our man on the scene, Anthony Fenech, is killing his coverage, especially via Twitter.
Okay. We got to have a Fenech moment here.
Yeah.
Because I don't usually, like, call attention to Tigers beat reporters. Like, the guys on the scene all the time are MLB.com's Jason Beck, Chris McCoskey, and Anthony Fenech. They're the guys that have been doing it year after year.
And Evan Woodbury will give
them for yes, MLive as my well. My bad, yeah. Evan like Woodbury, him. Yeah, he's great. He's one of the only guys there that does Spanish as well as English coverage.
Yeah, which is really weird nice. That no one does that, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's amazing. He does it, and he's really subtle about it. But oh my God, I don't know what happened, but Anthony Fenech went to Tigers spring, like not spring training camp, but they do like a skills fan camp. A fantasy camp, I guess.
Fantasy camp.
And the Tigers have been doing this every year for like decades. And somebody's like, Fenech, go down and write about fantasy camp. And the second he got there, something switched off in this man's brain because all of a sudden his previously occasionally like, you know, dry and informational tweets, which would kind of occasionally sneak in like a very self-aware one-liner, became hilarious. Like, he's just very, very self-aware in the funniest way possible right now.
And dry. Oh my God, like, dry as
so dry.
Bones in the desert.
But making fun of his own shtick, which is amazing. And then stuff like Jordan Zimmerman making fun of him, where he's, like, using Anthony's own lingo against him, which almost killed me. Like,
yeah, it's all very meta, yeah.
Yeah, it's so amazing. And then the other thing that's so good, I follow him on Instagram. And in his stories today, he posted a picture of himself next to his BBWAA membership. And he has shaved his scruff into a mustache. And it is so terrible. Oh, it's amazing. Anyway, Fenech is just a gem right now. So if you do not follow Anthony Fenech on Twitter, please do it. He is just killing the offseason game right now. Postseason, preseason game.
Yeah, and it's like he just, yeah, it's still the off season, really. But yeah, I mean, it's just I've had friends go to fantasy camps before. One of my best friends and his dad went and did the White Sox one because he's a White Sox fan, like, I don't know, maybe like 7 or 8 years ago. And all that happens is that you're around the coaches, you're around all the alumni for the team, you know, kind of like the, you know, Al Kaline's kind of almost too big of an example to be like the level we're talking about, but just kind of like ex-players who come around and coach
like
the Joel fantasy
Zumaya
players.
Like Joel Zumaya was one of the guys coaching the team this year.
Yeah, like those guys who kind of come and, you know, they'll tell stories and kind of share some anecdotes. And then the whole thing is that they just give you crap the entire time you're there. Like, they just bust you for, you know, everything you do. You're getting mocked relentlessly. They're mocking each other. You know, and I could see how that could really kind of break down some boundaries for a beat writer to actually kind of be in that situation now where, like, all the ex-players and the players who are around can mock you to some degree.
Yeah.
And that kind of, like, balances the, you know, the forces as opposed to, you know, like, oh, there's the reporter. So, yeah, all in all, just, like, a pretty slick move. And, yeah, there's just been a lot of funny stuff, like, where he posted he and Daniel Norris's pictures side by side and was like, oh, sorry, ladies, or whatever. You know,
no, it was the you versus the guy she told you not to worry about me, which was amazing because then Norris retweeted it. It's just like she was never good enough for either of us.
Yep. Yep.
And I died. The other thing is, too, he did write a really tremendous post for the Free Press about the fantasy camp experience, which is absolutely worth reading. It's just, like, charming and self-effacing. And yes, this is the Anthony Fenech love hour, apparently.
Which is very rare for us, because in general, yeah, like, it's not that we're opposed to the beat writers, but the beat writers, we just have always kind of taken, you know, from Kurt and Rob, especially in the beginning, like, that attitude that, like, okay, the beat writer's job is to be there, you know, to not get in too much trouble with the team, that the team, like, kicks them out or something, get the facts,
get the
quote.
I mean,
and then we interpret it and analyze everything, you know, like, we have a separate role, so we're not necessarily aligned with them, but we've had some, you know, occasional bouts of animosity with a few of them along the way, but...
But I mean, we used to have a beat writer. Like, I mean, when Kat was on staff, we had a beat writer. So it is something we kind of miss having. But we're not above certainly calling out quality goods on the internet. And this has been, I hope he keeps it up all season because it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to have fun with it. You know, like, we all know the Tigers aren't winning anything this year. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of, like, really, you know, shining new faces around other than, like, the prospects, like having Casey Mize and Matt Manning and, you know, Jake Rogers and some of those guys up in camp. There isn't a whole lot else to be like, yeah, you know, so yeah, it's just good to see him kind of getting loose with it and having fun. That's been cool. And not so much news has come out of camp so far. We've written up a few things, like Casey Mize really buying into analytics while he was at Auburn, and apparently he spent the offseason, like, developing a new slider, which, if you look at the grip, is actually a spiked curveball. So, and that really intrigued me. That was really interesting because the slider is kind of the one pitch that when they drafted Casey Mize, I was like, eh, that slider is pretty blunt and unimpressive. The rest of it all looks good. But if he's got a, you know, if he's got a sweet new sweeping slurve ball of some sort, that would be a pretty interesting development. And that's kind of been the big story, is just that the Tigers have finally, you know, they've been working at this for quite a while. And the big Caesar database came online last year, and this year everybody showed up to camp and they've got Edgertronic high-speed cameras behind every pitching station. They've got Rapsodo units measuring spin axis, you know, release point, blah blah blah. They're talking about Victor Reyes, like, improving his swing by using these balance plates that tell you kind of where your weight distribution is throughout your swing, which I've never even heard of anyone using before. Which
I think they use them at, like, what's the, like, Driveline Baseball uses them to do all their
stuff. Makes sense. Yeah, if anybody was going to, yeah, it'd be Driveline. It's the kind of thing that, you know, and a lot of, like, the reason I've been on all this stuff early is because I used to teach golf, and, like, golfers, like, pro golfers have been using all this stuff for, like, almost 20 years. And it's just weird to see it taking kind of so long for baseball to get to that point. But the Tigers really did unveil a lot of upgrades this year on that score, so that's kind of been one of the cool early stories. What else has been going on? We've had Franklin Perez already sidelined with stomach pain, which doesn't sound like any kind of an injury or anything like that. So hopefully,
no, they were saying it's non-muscular, but he's been down since Sunday, and they sent him for extra testing today. And I know it's unrelated. Like, when we posted it, we didn't mention it, but the first thing I think half of us came to mind with was the Leonis Martin deal. Once he went to the Indians, he had that terrible bacterial infection.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really scary.
Well, I'm sure this is Yeah, like he was really, really not healthy there for a while, and very lucky to be able to be back into baseball. So I think a lot of us are just looking at this going, oh, like we know how bad can be. So I don't think anybody wants to mess around.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure it's just a flu or something, but still it's like, ooh, let's hope it's, you know, one and done and he's back on his feet in a couple days.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, it's just really hard. It's just so vague to just kind of hear, like, well, you know, he's got stomach pain, and that kind of is, could lead to just about anything, or just be nothing. Maybe he just, you know, got a bad burger at the Tigers, you know, whatever, their dining hall at Lakeland, I don't know. He spent the entire offseason at Lakeland, too, from what I read, training and stuff, so... It's not a case of, you know, like the north-south thing, you know, epidemiologists talk about, you know, like how diseases, like, you know, if they travel north to south, it's a lot worse than east to west because you're, you know, it's just the way the world works that everything kind of travels east to west as far as the winds go. You know, migration has kind of always proceeded east and west more so than north and south. And so when something kind of jumps those different climate bands, it can catch somebody, but it doesn't seem like it has anything to do with that. It seems like he was in Florida the whole time, so yeah, hopefully nothing too major. He's really
fascinating digression, by the way.
Oh, sorry, thanks.
Went into like this enormously nerdy spiel on epidemiology, which was phenomenal.
I had to cut it off too because I was really warming up to go into this truly, is why the grasslands that stretch from Manchuria all the way to Hungary.
No. Please trust that, like, I have a history degree with a minor in anthropology, and, like, I'm pretty sure I have a book sitting on my shelf right now that would just geek you out hardcore about, hold on, I got all textbooks, like, the archaeology of disease is sitting on my shelf right now, you betcha.
Oh, hell yeah.
Human bone manual. They're all sitting next to each other.
Oh, this is where it gets
I
all
really
sick
like forensic anthropology.
Write, yeah, exactly. You write mysteries and, you know, you have serial killer characters here and there. So, yeah, I'm all like, oh, yeah. I guess you have to be into that.
When people watch my YouTube channel and find the, like, how to write crime scene book sitting behind me.
How to analyze blood spatter patterns. Yeah,
please, no, you're not kidding. You should see my Amazon wish list is just nothing but like guides to homicide investigation.
Yeah, it's a grim business to you know, and it's interesting too. There have been some crime writers that have really like finally like taken that final step and kind of gone crazy themselves and yeah, and gone too far with some things. So it's always funny. It's like it's a weird line to be obsessing about serial killers. Like I had a really really strong phase for a couple years when I was a teenager where I was like, you know, just really like horrified and fascinated and stuff. And then at a certain point got really like, man, why am I reading so much about this? I'm creeping myself out.
Oh, as a religious listener to My Favorite Murder and an avid reader of true crime, I have not yet reached the point where I have a limit. I will say, as a hard-earned lesson, never ever Google the crime scene photography.
Oh.
Just don't do it. I've seen things that can never be unseen.
Yeah, but same here. And man, you just brought some really bad pictures to mind that I've seen. Yeah, that's
sorry.
True.
I didn't mean to do it.
I did it to myself already, so that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
You know, I just have that thing where as a writer, you know, you feel like you've got to like, you know, you've got to stare into the dark heart of the human, you know, condition and spirit and stuff sometimes and not look away. But yeah, boy, it can get too much.
Yeah, there is some grim stuff out there on the internet.
Yeah. Humans have a very, what's the word? They have a very wide projection in terms of their good and bad.
Yeah.
to put it in baseball terms.
The scatter plot is large.
Yeah, there's a wide range of outcomes, so... Ed Gein to, you know, whatever you got, Gandhi or whatever.
You know what I just learned the other day? And I'm sorry, this is a wild digression, so I apologize to our listeners. Ed Gein only killed two people.
I know, he really didn't kill that many people.
He's not
just
actually a serial killer. He just was a creepy weirdo who dug bodies up and made, like, suits out of them, but only actually killed two people.
Yeah, for the most part, he took people that were already dead for his, you know, and basically he was, like, the basis for Psycho... And a couple other serial killers as well.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was the other big one. Yeah.
And I think even like Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs to some degree, I think had something on them from there. So.
Yeah, those are the three big ones for sure.
This is quite the baseball podcast.
Did you know that one of America's most notorious serial killers was not, in fact, a serial killer?
I want to break down the Catherine Eddowes letter, you know, from Jack the Ripper. Yeah.
You need to kill three people in order to get the title, by the way.
Is that it?
Three and up is the distinction to gain that serial killer title.
Oh, I didn't know it had to be three.
Three and up. I know. I know way too much. I'm so sorry.
I was trying to think of a baseball way to bring that back. I was thinking of the guy who macheted someone years ago. Can't remember that player, but anyway.
It's like being an all-star once does not necessarily make you a Hall of Famer.
That's right. Like, you know, this is why Blake Snell should not have won.
Oh my God.
You got to come back and do it every year, like Verlander, and be there for the postseason. Consistency, damn it. Anyway.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're into the heart of darkness now. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, so other than those couple things, there really hasn't been a ton of news. Like, you know, we're getting the usual best shape of their life. You know, Victor Reyes has put on 15 pounds of muscle somehow in the past couple months, which physiologically I'm not sure is actually possible without the aid of
any enhancements? Yeah. Speaking of which, I love that somebody pointed out that Matt Boyd should perhaps not be like pimping out these like rando health food supplements that he's been taking.
Which are
really super untested and probably not the best thing to be like, I'll take these Earth Home supplements for like making things great, and I don't know.
Yeah, so. I mean, I just have a bad feeling like he was out at Driveline this offseason, like taking dietary advice from Trevor Bauer or something, you know, and like coming back. He's on the keto diet. He's got the, you know, all these like random nutrient, you know, bars and pills and the whole extravaganza. And as a Canadian, I don't know for sure if you know this, but in America, like drugs are regulated, but anything else like vitamins and all that stuff is completely unregulated. Like you can make any claim you want to, and as long as it doesn't kill people, you know, within like a few days of them taking it, there's almost no law. I mean, it's just a free for all. Yeah. So like nutritional supplement, like that whole industry of like, you know, protein powders and, you know, all the supplements, all that kind of crap is really just like just a festering kind of wound as far as all this goes. And this is also how so many players end up getting popped for PEDs, is because a lot of times the products that are actually effective and not just like complete placebos, well, it's because they have steroids in them. So yeah.
You know, it's always, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so take it easy there, Matt Boyd. He does look good. He does look like he lost some weight. And, you know, he's kind of the guy right now. Interestingly enough, he's kind of the ace as far as what we've got. So. Yeah.
Speaking of which, who do you think is going to be the opening day pitcher?
That's a good question.
I might have to write about this now. I think it's still going to be Zimmerman.
It probably will be based on seniority, but
just because of the Ron Gardenhire way of thinking.
That's true.
I think by deservedness, you're probably right. It probably should be Boyd, but I suspect that we will see Zimmerman get the nod again.
Yeah, you're probably right. And maybe they'll set it up so that Boyd gets the home opener or something like that, maybe.
Do they open on the road this year?
Yeah, they do. I think they've got two series on the road, and then they come home. Like April 7th or something.
Professional Tigers writer, and I don't actually know when they're...
How dare you?
I know who they open spring training against, but like the actual season... Speaking of which, I'm going to be down there. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be cool. Yeah. As far as...
Yeah. It's the same as the opening of spring training. Okay. So they open in Canada. That's right. Duh.
Yep. Coming to you first.
But indoors, at least. So that's not going to get snowed out.
Yeah. Which makes sense. Like, that's... Yeah, I think we talked about this, you know, on a podcast last year about the same time. As like, why, you know, why don't they set it up so that everyone is, you know, in the Southwest and the South and in the domes? Like, start out as much as possible there for, you know, a few weeks and just work the schedule that way. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. Like, they'll be at the Rogers Center to get going and then come back to Detroit, you know, a week later or so.
Well, that'll be nice. Yeah, against the... I was not wrong about the Royals. Royals is home opener. That's why I had it in my head.
Yeah. And we did find out today that Spencer Turnbull is going to open the Grapefruit League play against Southeastern University. they've changed it up as far as which college they're playing. So they're gonna go against Southeastern University this year, and it seems like a lot of guys are just gonna get an inning, which is usually kind of how it goes. But it also sounded like maybe Casey Mize and Matt Manning might get an inning in that game, so that'd be cool to go to. Obviously, those guys aren't, nobody's really in full on like regular season form yet, but it'd be cool to kind of see the future all show up there in a line and pitch an inning in that game.
Yeah, although I really liked Gardy's statement about Mize today, where he's just like, nobody's surprised he's throwing 95. Calm down. We always knew he could throw heat. It's everything else we're worried about.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I got a good chuckle out of that. So, yes, it's a good sign to see that he is still throwing up there in the high velo. But I think Emily Walden from The Athletic was saying that his command was a bit shaky.
Yeah, that's perfectly natural, though. But I guess,
He didn't go anywhere after signing last year, so... right?
He played, but only, like, I think he pitched, like, parts of four games just to kind of get his feet wet in Lakeland. Which is a little different than how they handled Alex Faedo. And considering Alex Faedo came into camp last year, you know, with, like, 4 or 5 miles per hour off of his fastball, I mean, it's not a big deal, but, yeah, it's good to see Casey Mize coming in and, you know, be impressive and looking exactly like the Casey Mize they thought they were getting so far. So, yeah, that's a good sign.
Hopeful.
Yeah, so am I. I like Casey Mize. I wasn't thrilled with that pick because I'm just not sure he's really quite like an ace. But yeah, he seems to be doing everything right, and I think he should turn out to be pretty good, and probably won't take very long to be at that point. So if the Tigers were going to contend this year, he'd probably pitch in the majors this year.
I'm still bitter they didn't draft Nick Madrigal, but that's just me.
Yeah, so. And Nick Madrigal had a pretty good first season, and I was one of the bandwagon drivers for that one as well, so we'll see how that kind of all works out. Right now I actually feel like pretty good. I feel good about Casey Mize, but I like Nick Madrigal. I could see him kind of burgeoning into some kind of a Jose Altuve type second baseman, maybe not quite as good defensively, but with the similar like power and smoking line drives all over the field. So we'll see if that happens. I guess we'll get a good look if that does happen.
Yeah, come back in like 7 years and I'll be like, I told you once that Nick Madrigal was going to be so good. And
that
then
Nick Madrigal fellow. And he's so little, and Madrigal is such a fun name to say. It just sounds great in the mouth.
I know, it's wonderful.
So let's just take a quick gander across our front page. Like we kind of got to most of the things. I wrote, you know, like one desperate plea to the Tigers to circle back on the free agent market, because so many guys are going for, you know, a third or even less.
Oh my God. One-year deals.
Rumors. Yeah.
Minor projected. League deals. Bring me a catcher, Alavila, please. Maldonado and Wieters are still out there. It hurts.
Yep. There's so some interesting. I know. You know, and it's just, you know, I understand, like, neither of them is really going to change the equation that much. Like, I would have been perfectly happy if they'd gone and signed Manny Machado. We knew that wasn't going to happen. But yeah, you know, like, these guys are going for almost nothing. Some of these guys are getting minor league deals. And as I pointed out, like, the Tigers did kind of come back last year and get Francisco Liriano and then Travis Wood pretty late when we kind of thought they might be done. So now that Manny Machado has signed today, maybe things will shake up and the Tigers will still kind of dip back in there for another player or two, because, you know, Alavila's kind of started this pattern where he gets things done like pretty early in the off season, and then better players sign for less later, and we all like look at him like, dude, you know, like, you know, of all the teams, like, the Tigers are the ones who don't need to be in a rush because they're not trying to do anything anyway, and yet we've kind of been on the opposite side of the market like a couple years in a row now. So yeah.
That's, I mean, I'm not necessarily mad about the Jordy Mercer signing. I think he's a perfectly reasonable replacement. Like, we were already at the beginning of the offseason on the team's case going, you guys need a shortstop. You guys need a shortstop. And they went out and they probably picked up one of the best ones available that was not, you know, Manny Machado or Jose Iglesias.
Yeah.
Like, of the available players, I think Mercer is probably the third best guy available on the market. So I'm not necessarily mad at them, even though I am fairly certain they could have gotten him cheaper. But man, yeah, I would just like to see them do, you know, just a little bit more.
Yeah, just enough to, like, you know, at least know that they're going to be solid at a key position like catcher. Like, you know, I know they're not really going to do anything major, but I still would like them to think about that. And I just wonder what Marwin Gonzalez is going to get as far as offers right now, because it just doesn't seem like anyone in contention really has the, you know, the payroll or the need or the interest, which is stupid because Marwin Gonzalez is basically like a three-war player who can play anything but center field and catcher, and maybe pitcher. I don't know. Maybe he could pitch. I don't want to put it past him. Maybe he can.
Hey, if Andrew Romine can play all nine positions, I would not put it past Marwin Gonzalez.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I think the projection for Marwin Gonzalez was like 3 years, $36 million from MLB trade rumors to the Twins. And right now, I think he's looking at more like 2 years, like 12 to 15 million, you know, tops. It's kind of hard to see him getting more than that. Manny Machado, as everyone or may not have heard, like came through and got the 10-year, $300 million deal from the Padres. And I know immediately, like, the people on one side were like, oh, see, free agency is fine. Everybody else was kind of like, nope, you know, we always knew that Manny and Bryce would get their money. That's not the issue. It's the veterans who are kind of like small potatoes who are getting crushed. And Marwin Gonzalez is another example of a guy like that who is probably running out of options. And we'll just see how it goes. But if he gets $30 million from somebody, I think I'm going to be real surprised at this point.
Well, what I have to laugh about is that Manny Machado ended up getting the exact same deal that the Washington Nationals offered Harper, and he turned down.
Supposedly. Allegedly. But yeah.
Allegedly. Yeah. But it's to the number. Like, that was supposedly exactly what the deal that was offered to Harper was. And now everyone's out there joking that Boraz is probably just waiting for somebody to offer $301 million.
Yep.
Because he'll have won.
Yep, exactly. He's got to get that. I think that there is some truth to like how that is going to play out. And it was interesting because the Chicago White Sox, all right, we're on to the Manny Machado topic now, so we'll just dive in. But the White Sox apparently offered him $250 million, but they didn't want to give any opt-outs.
Yeah, I think it was $250
for eight.
The Padres
offered him a five. Oh, was it for eight?
I think $250 for eight was what I've heard. And again, with all of the like rumors flying around everywhere, I can't say that was true or not, but that's what I heard that the White Sox offered was, yeah, $250 over eight. And I hadn't heard about the opt-out part. I think the opt-out with the Padres is after year five.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, you know, which is all right. Like, you know, that opens up kind of a five-year window for the Padres, and they've got Fernando Tatis and Luis Urias and a bunch of other really good, really good position prospects and a lot of pitchers all kind of set to come up in the next year, if not this year. So the timing was pretty good for them, and I think it's pretty impressive that the Padres are going out and swinging for the fences. And I think that only brings their payroll to something like $120 million, somewhere in that
range. Well,
that's
the other thing.
So they're still thinking, yeah.
Do you think they might go out and get Harper, too? They could.
Yeah, they certainly could. I wouldn't if I was them. Like, of the two, I think Manny Machado is more worthy of, like, the huge contract. But I just don't know right now. I kind of feel like the Phillies, because of, like, all the big talk, like, all through the early part of the season, and then they go and they, you know, they add a couple little pieces, and then they trade for JT Realmuto, and it's like, okay, you know, now you guys, you know, got to get Machado or Harper to kind of finish this thing off and put yourself into contention, you know, at least, like, seriously, like, okay, these guys might be the class of the NL East, and, you know, they lost out on Machado. And it seems like Harper is the one they wanted, so we'll see. But I would, if I was them, I'd kind of feel pretty obliged to make a big-ass offer right now, because their fans, that
see.
Fan base, Phillies fans do not take this kind of thing lying down. And if you promised them, you know, that we were going to spend stupid money this offseason, like their owner said, you better do it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, when you drop a phrase that's actually stupid money, I think you are kind of required to do. I mean, they haven't done nothing.
They've improved, but yeah, not that much. Like JT Realmuto is probably like an extra two or three wins, maybe at the catcher position, which is, you know, pretty good, and it was well worth making that trade. But
well,
that doesn't really like blow anybody away
for another 4 years.
Yeah, that's
so that's not a very team friendly deal. So like, ridiculously smart move on their part. And I think you're going to see a bit more of that happening too, with teams signing these very friendly extensions. Nick Castellanos.
Yeah, I think it kind of works out best for pitchers, because the pitchers have so much like to worry about as far as injury, you know, or you know, whatever, blowing out their elbow at like in the wrong year, like right before they hit free agency, and it just tanking them. For position players, I would still just be, if I was a position player, I'd still be like, no, I'm not signing an extension. But yeah, for a pitcher like Nola, I think that makes pretty good sense for them. And obviously it makes sense for the team. Definitely, if you can do that.
I heard a good rumor today that I hope is true. I don't know if I put much stock in it, but because I don't think it came from a reliable source, but I want secondary backup on it of the Angels getting real bold and deciding to make a big long-term extension offer to Trout, because I don't want to see him linger on the free agent market like this. I just want them to extend him and, you know, to live up to their expectation, you know, have a great season with him. And like, Ohtani's got, what, one more year? What was the deal they signed with Ohtani?
No, I thought Ohtani like basically had to be like brought in just like a regular prospect, and so they've got, you know, whatever, the usual years of team
is it
control.
The same?
Okay. I think so, which is insanity. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's how that ended up going down. They had to pay that money to his Japanese team,
right,
for the posting fee. But I don't think he ended up getting that much. He just kind of got like the bonus, and that was it. So, which is just insanity. Like, you just walk into that. Like, you have to go for it if you're them. You've got Upton, you've got Trout, you've got Andrelton Simmons playing great shortstop. They picked up Zach Cozart. They've made like small positional moves, but they've just got the pitching just continues to let them down. They just keep getting hurt. It's a mess. So I don't know. That's a tough call, because it would feel weird to have Trout elsewhere, but I also really want the circus. Like, that would just be such a circus, because whatever you think of like Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, Mike Trout is worth like $50 million a year, you know, probably for like a decade, honestly.
Mike Trout,
he won't get that maybe, but
without a lot of flash, is the best player in baseball. Like, he doesn't demand a lot of attention, but oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, Mookie Betts, you know, is in the ballpark and won the MVP this year, but man, Trout just every year just comes out and just does this, and it's insane. So yeah, I don't know. Let me look up. I'm just curious. I'm just looking up Shohei Ohtani to see what he's going to make this year as a part-time DH for the Angels. I still think it's, Yeah, you know, he's just making league minimum this year and next,
which is
goofy. Like, I'm sure Ohtani has like a shit ton of marketing opportunities and ad deals and stuff in Japan, so he's probably making plenty of money on the side. But that's just not even right that the Angels could just get him for league minimum. Like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah,
that is not fair.
Oh my God,
this is like another outcrop of like the league trying to control the international free agent market, and you know, and not have to give out these big deals to these guys. The Nippon League is a little bit different just because of the posting fees and the control setup that they have, but man, I mean, just like, what a coup is that? And it's just weird, you know, like, you'd think they'd be the team that would come out and make a big move for a pitcher, and they haven't really done anything.
That's weird. He's still got Dallas Keuchel out there not signing.
Yep.
Oh my God.
And they've got a pretty good farm system. You know, I would assume they don't want to trade Joe Adell, who I think might be the best prospect in baseball or very close to it. He's a better prospect than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. In my eyes, and that'll freak a lot of people out. But Joe Adell's a really good outfielder too, you know, and he's fast. He's going to steal bases. Like, I don't have any doubt Vladimir Guerrero is going to come out and hit like JD Martinez, but he's going to field like JD Martinez as well and run like JD Martinez. So yeah, I don't know. They've got him coming, and they do have a couple other good players in the upper minors. So I don't know. It just seems like this is a good time for them to sell their prospects, extend Mike Trout if you can, get yourself some damn pitchers. What are you doing? We have this fine Matt Boyd over here. What am I bid? Can I get Jamai Jones and Brandon Marsh, the two of their top couple prospects? Something like that. I don't know. If I was Al Avila, I'd be calling them, and I'd be calling the Padres. Like, you know, are you guys interested in Boyd? I'm just saying.
Early in the offseason, I would have said to you that the Mariners would go for Boyd 100%, and then the Mariners were like, what players? And traded or dumped everybody. Everybody. It was a very weird, very DePoto-esque offseason that I just did not see coming. So,
yeah, they just kind of ran into that wall, you know, with Felix, Felix kind of being looking over the hill, and then Paxton was coming up on free agency, and I guess they just decided they couldn't hold it together anymore. Just hadn't made enough happen, but yeah, it was weird, and that happened so early too, and it was all tied into Brody Van I don't know, Waggonen. I think it's Waggonen, who took over, you know, as GM from the Mets and started making all those moves and stuff. And yeah, that was kind of like the hype early in the off season. Been a lot of trading this off season again. Almost more interesting trades than free agent signings. So at least until today. So yeah, I don't know. It's been another weird off season. I think we've talked about that enough, though. Like, I honestly, like, I was laughing when I wrote that Tiger should circle back to the free agent market article, because I was just like, one more time for the people in the back who were blowing the Tigers off this whole offseason, and I apologize, we're going to do this one more time, and then we're done. We'll move on. Because you know, there's a lot of people out there just furious, you know, like, they're not going to spend any money, just stop it. Ah.
I don't know. I haven't quite given up hope. I think they might still go and pick somebody up, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I kind of think they will as well, but yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be that big. So yeah, we're just kind of at that point where we're getting like scintillating tidbits like, oh, Brandon Dixon, you know, crushed Daniel Norris batting practice fastball of the fence, and you know, Miggy took somebody deep. Miggy took the first batting practice of you know, basically since he went down with that injury, the first live batting practice against Matt Boyd, and you know, sounded like Miggy was in his usual spirits and
he looks great. Like,
he does look really good.
Looks like he's in good shape. He looks, I mean, I'm not going to best shape of his life, but like, he looks really good.
He does. And he just looks so like damn happy to be back on the baseball field. You know, Miguel Cabrera is just a barrel of fun. So let's just hope he's healthy. You know, we'll take what we can get on the field from him, but just having him around for the full season would really, really make me feel better. And it would feel like the Tigers, the Tigers didn't even feel like a team that I didn't really even watch that much before last year, because there's just no Miggy. There's no trademark, no stamp on it. No. So
he's definitely like the heart of the team. And as much as we want to complain about that albatross of a contract, it's not the Tigers without Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, and from the standpoint of like an albatross, like, you know, flying down out of the sky while you're trying to sail your ship around through all these travails and, like, you know, ripping your hair out and dragging you into the water. It's not that bad. It's not Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner albatross, you know, it's not that level. So, yeah, it's still worth it just to have Miguel Cabrera and see him out there. See, this is all Adam Dubbin's fault. People, we hired Adam, who some of you may know as H2 Polo Punk. We've been on the site forever, did the Tiger Bites series of GIFs and game highlights for us a couple years ago. And so he's going to be providing a lot of content from Lakeland. And, you know, we'll just see whatever else he kind of wants to get into. But that's been a cool hire, and we all really like Adam. So it was fun to bring him on the team. But he's,
oh,
also,
he's been
like,
a great addition.
He's a very scientific-minded person and very erudite. And so, like, all of a sudden, like, the, you know, the amount of times I have to, like, return to the internet dictionary while I'm reading comments on our Slack channel has, like, gone up exponentially since he got in there. It's like, settle down, dude.
He's keeping us on our toes, intelligence-wise.
No, it's always good to have a bunch of vocabulary that I don't necessarily think of all the time thrown around constantly. It's been fun, too. So, yeah, that's been a good addition. The team is kind of rounding together here pretty well. I feel pretty good. Like, it's been it's been kind of a weird transition year at the site, just because with Kurt mentioning getting laid off last year and Grace leaving with him and Kate Cat left the year before. There's just been a lot of turnover and change going on. So on that front, for me personally, at least, I feel like way better this season. Like, we're going into it.
I definitely think we've established our like core group for sure. And it does feel a lot better to kind of have a normal rhythm back again.
Yeah. Yep. I feel a little bit looser, which is good.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's turn. I'm just trying to think. I'm just racking my brain. Is there any other little tidbit from spring training that we haven't really talked about before we get into listener questions?
No, I think we've kind of touched bases on everything. Everyone's there.
Tigers have a bunch of magic new devices everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, they're leaning into the analytics thing, which is a really promising sign. Everyone seems super gung-ho for the season. Like, if they're not going to contend, don't tell them that. I'm pretty hyped about their hype, which is a very positive sign.
Daniel Norris, Taekwondo master. I forgot about that part.
Yes,
I might have mentioned that
Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer both shaved.
That's true too. Michael Fulmer looks really like almost unrecognizable compared, you know, like Daniel Norris shaves were like used to it, but Michael Fulmer, I was like, what the hell? I don't even recognize this dude. It was like when Alex Wilson shaved, and I was immediately like, oh God, grow a beard, come back. You don't look right, dude. Just doesn't look right that way. Yeah, but Daniel Norris apparently this offseason, well, all right, apparently. I knew this because I talked to Daniel Norris quite a bit on Instagram.
No, humble brag.
I'll just take that moment to brag and also share the artist Gregory Allen Isakoff, who Daniel turned me on to last week, who's kind of a folk artist on the lines of like Iron and Wine
Oh.
or Elliott Smith, something like that. If you're into that sort of thing, this dude is good. Like, I got my guitar out and started playing along like within minutes because I was like, oh shit, this is
That
really good.
actually sounds super good. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Yeah, so you have to check him out. But Daniel, on top of everything else, and he trained at like Performance 3, which is kind of the place that kind of rebuilt Anibal Sanchez after his injuries and kind of got him back feeling good. He trained there, and he also started taking like MMA classes, and basically it was like a lot of taekwondo. It was a lot of like taekwondo kicks to try to work on his like hip mobility, glute strength, and leg dexterity, and all that stuff, which has all been really compromised by the constant like dealing with this groin issue. And it sounds like he's feeling really good. So at least for now, all signs are go. Michael Former has a brace on his knee that is supposedly there to kind of retrain like how he drives off of his right knee more so than to support it. I guess he's feels fine, but it's mainly for that purpose. So, there's still kind of those question marks with those two and with Miguel as far as injury goes. And as excited as I am for the season to start, like I kind of just want everybody to get there healthy. So hopefully we'll
You know what we
get
didn't talk
through.
about since you bring up Anibal Sanchez is Doug Fister retired.
Oh, that's right. The fist. Yeah, that's true.
Mr. Fister retired at 35.
Yeah, and still like effective to some degree.
Well, I mean,
But
they were
yeah.
saying, and like when I wrote it up, that apparently they were saying he had gotten offers, which actually isn't surprising because he probably could have gotten a fair number of 1-year deals. Even like a good minor league deal with a call-up option. Like, I have no doubt that that's true. I have no doubt that a guy like Doug Fister still got offers, but apparently decided he wanted to take the time and spend it with his family while they're still young. So I admire that.
Yeah, so do I. That's he's had a really good career and has played for some really good teams, and if you don't really have like a good chance to play on a World Series, contender, then yeah, that just seems like the way to go. Take the time with the kids. It's interesting, like Doug Fister, wasn't even that familiar with him when we traded for him, and man, I really just have like such strong memories of like the first like 5 or 6 Doug Fister starts where everyone was sort of like, oh shit. This guy's really good.
I
Like the
loved him.
command.
I was
Yeah.
such a fan. I remember watching that game where he had the 10 consecutive strikeouts. I was at work. I should not have been watching a baseball game. But 100% remember watching that game. It was super exciting.
Yeah, just he just had such a unique style, like pitching, such a tall guy pitching without like necessarily a great like swing and miss pitch. He would just kind of just keep busting that huge tailing two-seamer on people, bring the curveball and the changeup on top of it, and it just seemed like, guys were just baffled. Like, when they thought they were on a pitch, they hit it off their hands practically, and then they just sit there and watch those big curveballs just pour into the zone. It was really fun. That was a really good moment. I remember like Doug Fister is kind of like that was like the herald, like, oh, they've got another arm to go with, Verlander, Porcello, and Scherzer, and those guys, and here we go.
Well,
So,
and then of course I also remember him taking that beaner off of the head at game 2 of the World Series and then staying in the game.
Oh man,
Holy mercy, what a moment. And the
yeah, he
best
was
part
a
is
tough guy.
you cannot find that video on YouTube that's shareable, just so you know,
Oh,
as
really?
I wrote that article and tried to share that moment. You
Oh.
cannot.
Oh, they've got that hidden. They don't want that
Yeah,
getting
well,
out
there's
there anyway.
nothing on the official MLB ones, and then anyone who has it posted, it's unshareable. And I'm
Is
like,
there like some internet fetishists who are really into like line drives off the head?
oh no, but it being the internet, I would not be
Yeah.
surprised if that's a thing.
Yeah, probably. Rule 34, as you
Rule
guys mentioned
34. We
earlier.
did talk about that at work earlier today, didn't we? Oh no. Don't look that up if you don't know what it is.
No, you don't want to know. Don't listen to Ashley and Brandon. We're terrible people.
I mean,
Stay young
we're
and
talking
innocent.
about serial killers and the internet porn. So, I mean, the more you know, kids, please. Jesus.
Yeah, but yeah, Doug Fister, just a super cool dude. The other play I remember him being on, just on the field for, was that crazy grounder that Iglesias dove for and threw like as he was crashing into the ground, like scooped it and threw all in one motion. Kind of the legendary Iggy play. That was a broken bat Doug Fister special. And, you know, Doug Fister proved to me, like, a point, which is that you can sometimes be too good. Like, you can get too weak a contact, and it's really hard to make plays on that on that kind of thing. Because he would just get, like, these sawed-off, like, weird choppers and swinging bunts where dudes just broke their bat. Like, parts of it flew everywhere. Like, the fielders were kind of disoriented for a second, and dudes would just scamper to first. It seems like I saw that a lot with Doug Fister on the mound. He was a unique cat. He was kind of his own guy. Yeah. So kudos
it's
to you, Doug
Fister. End of an era there. I thought Sanchez would be the first to go.
Yeah, and Sanchez is trying to follow in the footsteps of, you know, J.D. Martinez and Rick Porcello and, damn it, Justin Verlander and all the people who've left the Tigers and gone to win a World Series somewhere else, which is super frustrating. Damn it. Justin Wilson, Alex Avila got a ring with the Cubs.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm happy for him, but damn it, that sucks. Okay, let's move on and do some listener questions real quick and see what you guys all have to ask about. Peter Lindau on Facebook wants to know what Tigers prospects will make their major league debuts this season. Well, you've seen a lot of the guys that you're going to see a lot of. You know, we saw Kristen Stewart to some degree last year. Obviously, Grayson Greiner wasn't really, like, regarded as a real prospect, but has made his way to the starting catching role, apparently. So good for you.
Yeah. And, on that note, I do think we're going to see Rodgers at
Might see Rodgers. I think so, too. We were arguing about this on the site because everybody keeps going like, oh, well, game is service time, and, you know, you don't want to call him up any sooner than you have to, but the big value of Jake Rodgers is his defense, and that's wasted in the minor leagues, and catchers don't, their knees don't hold up forever, their defense doesn't hold up forever, so I can understand, like, giving Rodgers some time to work on the bat and try to level out his swing and work on some of those issues, but yeah, I would like to see him this year. If they have anybody go down and need a backup, I'd prefer they just call Jake Rodgers up and start getting him some experience.
He might as well, right? Like, if you're not truly making a run for it, and I'm not saying that they're not going to try to win games. That's not my point here. I say that they're not really in contention level. Why not bring up guys to get reps against minor league player, major league, like, pitchers and to, like, see the level of play that they're expecting him to be at in the next year? I think it's a good call.
Yep. Especially for guys who maybe, like, are used to being kind of the man. Like, Jake Rodgers kind of feels like he's been a guy who all along was, like, this prized catching prospect and, you know, expected to do well. You know, sometimes it's good for those guys to come up and kind of get a little kick in the ass before they go back down and, like, okay, I've got to make, you know, a little bit more of a stride here before I get there.
Well,
and Isaac Paredes might be a similar case where he's already kind of hit the hell out of Erie. And if he starts out at Erie again and is hitting and they bring him to Toledo and he's just wrecking shop, like, I'm not a big fan, you know, none of us really like the gaming the service time thing. I understand it. And if you need to do it, okay, everybody else is doing it. I'm not going to lose my mind. But, you know, I don't believe in, like, installing players at their level. I don't think it's good for their development. Like, I think you keep challenging them as long as you can. I'd love to see Isaac Paredes make it up by the end of the year and get to work with, like, Miguel Cabrera and, you know, and kind of be in that environment and hopefully go take that into the offseason and work on whatever he's got to work on. So, yeah, we might see him in September. I don't think that's unrealistic. There's a whole host of other guys, too. Like, the guys to really watch out for are the pitchers, because you already saw Spencer Turnbull. You're going to see a bunch of Spencer Turnbull probably this year. You might see Kyle Funkhauser and Bo Burrows. You'll see some of the relief prospects like Zach Houston. You might see Brian Garcia, who is my favorite relief prospect that we've got, who had Tommy John last year and should be coming back sometime this summer. So there's some guys like that. Matt Hall. You might even see John Schreiber, who was really good at Erie and throws from kind of like a high sidearm. Which not too many guys do, but he's an interesting pitcher. Yeah, he's a really interesting pitcher to watch and a fun guy. Keenan has talked to him a few times, and I follow him on Twitter, and he's usually got something funny to say. So, yeah, he could be interesting. So, yeah, there's some of those guys. Maybe you'll see Daz Cameron late in the year. You might even see Willie Castro along the way if the Tigers need a middle infielder. to kind of fill in for an injury or whatever it is. Willy Castro and Dawa Lugo both will probably at least get some kind of an opportunity, I would imagine, this year. But yeah, it's probably more of an injury fill-in kind of a thing than anything. Yeah. I don't think you're going to see Casey Mize. I think the Tigers really just do not want to do that. I think they would really like to hold Casey Mize back and not start his service time clock and give him a whole year to kind of settle into the routine and stuff.
No, I would agree. I'd be shocked to see him this year.
Yeah, I would be really shocked too, honestly. It'd be fun. It'd be neat to see him in September. And people have kind of asked, like, oh, what the hell is there to look forward to this year? It's just like last year. But the difference is that there are, you know, younger players that you're going to see a lot more of this year. And some of the guys like Nico Goodrum, Kristen Stewart, some of those guys that we've seen a little bit of, Joe Jimenez, are, you know, have some experience now. And you're going to see them kind of have a full season to hopefully take a step forward. And some of those guys will be fun. Jamer Candelario, all for that reason. So there's more to watch. Like, we're a little bit closer to, like, seeing a bit of the future in this season than we were last year.
I think you're more likely to see glimmers of hope for sure, more so than like just scraping the bottom.
Yeah. And you know, people just need to give these guys time. Like, you know, we've talked about this a lot with Norris and Fulmer. People are giving up on those guys way too quick, and they're 25 right now. It's going to turn 26 this year. It just takes time, especially for pitching prospects, which is another reason why the rebuild, unfortunately, is, if the Tigers try to do it now or try to do something soon in the next year or so, probably will take a little bit longer than people even expected, even if things go well. So, you know, patience is hard to come by after we've already had like a bunch of bad seasons in a row, but we're probably not going to have much choice in the matter, I'm afraid.
Alas.
Yeah. All right. And tying into that, Brian Cowell kind of wants to know who will be the final five guys to make the rotation, say, like in 2020, 2021, when we're finally kind of turning things around. And that's just a really hard question, just because I assume that the Tigers are going to trade at least one, if not more, of Fulmer, Norris, and Boyd. So it's really, like the guys who pitch best out of that group, who you think, like, oh, well, these guys might be the ones to rebuild around. No, those will be the guys that get traded away.
I don't think there's any real... I don't know how many guys are actually going to end up being untouchable when you go into an actual contention season for trades ahead of that. So I think Mize will be there.
Manning. Yep. I'll say Mize and Manning.
I think those might be your only truly untouchable prospects. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Whoever's left of Fulmer, Norris, and Boyd, like, okay, maybe there's one of those guys, but Zimmerman will be gone after 2020, and then, Mize, Manning, and, you know, maybe Burroughs or Turnbull. I tend to think those guys end up as relievers, maybe Franklin Perez, but, we'll just kind of have to see how some of those things play out. Jerry Brockenma, aside from Kristen Stewart, who will be the Rookie of the Year running this year. Ooh, Rookie of the Year on the Tigers.
Oh, God, I have to make any lists.
I kind of feel like Kristen Stewart is just the man.
I feel like he's a lot more likely to take it because there was a lot of uncertainty last year as to whether or not he'd even make the cut and make any time up in the majors. So I think with him seeing regular playing time, yes, I would agree with you.
Yeah, I just don't see anybody else. Like we said, you'll see a lot of prospects this year. You will start seeing some of the guys come up, not the best of the bunch necessarily, but some of them. But they're not going to be here the full season. They're just going to kind of be, feeding in here and there as injury replacements, September call-ups, that sort of thing. So yeah, I would have to say Kristen Stewart is probably going to rake. I feel really good about Kristen Stewart as the hitter. As a left fielder, I don't feel that good about it, but that's all right. That's okay. We'll take what we can get for the time being. He should be fun to watch hit. And this is another reason why I keep bringing up Marwin Gonzalez, because I just have it in my mind. Like, okay, Jamer Candelario, Marwin Gonzalez, two guys who can take a walk, both switch hitters. You lead off with them. Then you go, whatever, Miggy, Castellanos, Kristen Stewart in some order. That's not bad. That's a pretty solid front five.
Yeah, man, I would like to see that.
Yep. I guess, we'll put Nico in there for Marwin since they're probably not going to do that. And, it might not be that bad. We'll see how it goes. Is there one more? When is a real... Oh, man, everybody's impatient. When is a realistic offseason for the Tigers to be buyers? And who could be the potential players they target that offseason?
I don't know.
I know. It's just wild speculation. I don't know when the Tigers are going to spend, and I don't know kind of what the criteria they have in mind, assuming they even have a plan, which I honestly, I'm not just being a smartass here, I'm not really sure that the Tigers have that kind of a plan, the way a lot of other teams who've rebuilt have. It really feels like they're kind of just throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks, waiting to see kind of how their guys develop. So it's just really hard to plan. Like, you could look at, I think, 2021 is when Trout and Mookie Betts are both supposed to hit free agency. Next year, Nolan Arenado, I know, will hit free agency.
I don't think so.
Well, maybe not. They might wrap him up.
I would be shocked if there's not an extension with the Rockies before he hits free agency.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty foolish if they didn't. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that again goes back to the, you know, if people want to be mad at us for writing about Manny Machado, there's a reason for that, which is that you just don't ever get 26-year-old all-star free agents. They don't ever come along. Like, you know, I can't remember the last one. Maybe there was one a couple years ago and I'm flaking on their name. But it just doesn't happen because teams lock those guys up, or those star players don't reach free agency until they're 29, 30 years old, at which point you don't really want to give them more than 4 or 5 years. It's just a really rare opportunity. Manny Machado in particular is at a, you know, could play shortstop for us for 4 years, and that's a position that we really don't have much in the minor leagues.
Willie Castro on the up, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Wenzel Perez has a lot of intrigue, but he's only going to be 19 this year, so he's still at least 2 or 3 years away. So, yeah, that's kind of the reason we keep harping about, you know, don't buy into this rebuild crap, because there's no such thing as, like, timing out a rebuild on your own terms. The league goes on, and the Tigers have just whiffed on probably the best opportunity they'll have before whatever kind of rebuild you're envisioning. They've whiffed on that chance to add that player. So, and I wouldn't really bother with Bryce Harper, just because corner outfielder, as good as he is and as big of a star as he is,
it's not a need the Tigers have as much as they did an infielder.
Yeah. You could do a lot of marketing with Bryce Harper. I'm sure he brings a lot of value beyond even what he does on the field. But yeah, we just, you know, finding a right fielder won't be the thing that keeps the Tigers from winning a World Series in 2024. I know, that's so far away. Honestly, like, 2019, like, feels like, wow, wasn't I going to be dead?
Yeah, but I think when
what I thought of when I was a kid, I was like, man, 2020
sounds so far away. We initially went into this rebuild, I'm like, it's cool, guys, they'll be competing by 2020. I'm like, I'm 900 years old now. And I'm so sad about everything. They've worn me down, Brandon. This offseason may have aged me like 45 years.
I know. Really, it's just so damn tiresome. And I know it's tiresome, God. You know, like, for everyone involved. It's tiresome for fans to hear us bitch and have that be like the focus. But when there isn't that much news, the lack of news becomes the news. That's kind of just a truism, and unfortunately we've seen it play out the past 2 years. And yeah, the Tigers don't really seem poised to do a whole lot next year if they weren't going to do it this year, so I don't know. At least it'll be interesting seeing the prospects come up, but that's a really hard road to go. And, you know, for anybody thinking we could just build, you know, we should just wait and build the team from within and blah blah blah, the San Diego Padres have literally twice the farm system we have at minimum, and they went out and signed Eric Hosmer last year, which was stupid, by the way. But anyway, but then they went out and they made another big move this year, and a pretty smart one, I think. And it just goes to show that, you know, one way or the other, signing free agents has to be a part of your rebuild plan, and probably a big-time free agent. So,
yep.
I don't know. We'll see what happens down the road.
But that's the thing. Mike Petriello of Stackhouse pointed it out that it's usually these underdog, not necessarily small market, but losing teams that sign these big guys. And lo and behold, after they sign them, they typically get better.
Funny how that works.
It's amazing, the correlation there.
I know. I don't even bother making this argument on the site anymore because the people who are all in and have really bought into the whole rebuild, like, oh, don't spend any money.
But that's what
Support.
kills me is if you're buying a 10-year contract with a guy like Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, yeah, okay, you're only buying maybe the next 5 years where they're actually really good, but that's the 5-year window where you're pushing yourself back towards contention. So why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And if you look at like Manny Machado is worth on a yearly basis right now, it's more like 40, 45 million. And
Yeah,
that's
and
why
then
you give him a 10-year deal and
in
you bring it
6
down to
years, he's
30 million a year
worth
and
11 or something, but it is what it is, right? So
Exactly. So yeah, that part of it is just frustrating. And if people just don't want to go that route or they really kind of buying into what the Tigers are selling, I can understand that. It sucks to have to kind of think about your team as being owned by a cheapskate who's not really trying that hard to win and is sort of like, okay, just kind of flaking along. But there is something to the
I don't
idea
know.
that, well, there is something to the idea that you shouldn't let your team, fall to complete ruin for very long. Like the Astros are one example, and the Astros are run by probably the smartest group of people in baseball right now, based on everything we've seen. It's just not that easy to do that. When your team is terrible, you devalue everyone around you. It's demoralizing to the team, it's demoralizing to the fans. You don't necessarily get the best out of everyone. And we've seen innumerable teams kind of do this, oh, we're gonna be bad for a while, but we'll get it back. And they just never do. Things don't go their way. Then things do kind of start to turn their way, and they're premature in spending too much money on the wrong guy, like Chris Davis or God knows what. There's just so many ways it can go wrong. So, yeah, I just really don't like the idea of completely tanking it. I want the Tigers to at least try to put together kind of a razzy, cheap, heavily value-centric team where, they try some things and experiment a little bit, and we just don't have really the. We just don't have the personnel in the front office necessarily that are going to do that kind of thing. So we're going our own route here, and it's all kind of seems like it's going to depend on the health of our pitching prospects, which is terrifying a little
Yeah,
bit.
I mean, I think I would be a turd of the tide if they started looking to draft guys that were not necessarily hard-throwing right-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
I
It is time to move on from that.
mean,
Like if we've said this before, but if there's anything, that you want to pray for the Tigers this year, it's pray that they find a kick-ass college bat at 5 in the draft. That's job number one. Job number two is that they can turn one of their starters and hopefully one of the, maybe another player, maybe even Joe Jimenez if it needs to go that route, to find an absolutely elite positional prospect. They need those two things. They need two kick-ass position player prospects who are close to the major leagues.
Yep.
Because if those guys are 18, by the time they get here, you're already going to be turning over Candelario. You're going to be turning over, Jimenez, maybe Kristen Stewart, like all the pitchers, Fulmer, Boyd Norris, all those guys are going to be moving on. You don't get forever to do this. So yeah, really hope for those things to come true. Oh, okay, Robert James. I like this. Robert James is the angry man on Twitter, and I love him because he has really good taste in books. But he's very frustrated. At what point does it make more sense to boycott the team than to support what is looking more and more like a bad faith effort to save a billionaire a few extra bucks?
Oh.
Bold, bold, bold question. I don't know. Boycotts are a weird thing. I remember conservatives in America freaking out about Starbucks, non-Christmassy
The red
Christmas
cup
cups.
debacle.
We're gonna
Oh,
boycott
no.
Starbucks. And then about a week ago, Howard Schultz, their CEO, decides he wants to run as kind of a middle of the road moderate, and all the liberals are like, "Oh Jesus, screw this guy! We're boycotting Starbucks." Somewhere people aren't boycotting Starbucks because they seem to be just absolutely hauling in the dollars. So I think a lot of people are lying on both sides, and I don't really know what boycotting necessarily. There's just no point. Like it would take a couple more years before I was like, "Oh, just screw this entirely. I'm gonna go pick another team to root for temporarily." I'm just not that guy. I've been a Detroit. I mean, I was a Lions fan for a long time until I finally wised up in like 2001, while the rest of you saps are still out there suffering. So
I have a
I
philosophy
don't
about
know.
baseball fandom, and I think you can fall into one of two camps where you either love a team, regardless of who's on it, who's running it, and how well they're doing, or you choose to pick teams based on how well you think they're going to do. And I think both are absolutely fair approaches. I don't think there is any wrong way to be a baseball fan. But I think if you're a if you consider yourself a diehard Tigers fan, I consider myself a diehard Tigers fan, even though I also write about and care about the Rays. I started out with the Tigers. I love the Tigers. Whether or not I agree with their current front office, whether or not I have any opinion about their current ownership, which I do not. I had warm fuzzies about Mike Ilitch. I don't have any opinions whatsoever on Chris. I don't think that he's been around long enough for me to really have any. And Mike, I think, was a Mike. What was great about Mike Ilitch is that you knew he was a fan, not only of the team, but of baseball in general. And you knew he wanted to win. And I think that that made it a lot easier for teams to like, for fans to like really be like in on his own hype. And I think you're welcome to say, I'm done with the Tigers because I don't feel like they're trying. But I don't know that that's fair. I think that we are in a position right now where it's hard to like a team that isn't winning. But we were just having this discussion today in the Slack channel about how, do you remember not only, like not even 8 years ago, the Texas Rangers and the Detroit Tigers were in the ALCS together.
And looked like they were set up to be juggernauts for years. Yeah.
Yeah. And those teams were fantastic. And in that same time period, the Houston Astros were a laughing stock of a team. So I think we have to understand that, like all things, there is a time to win and a time to lose, and no baseball team is always going to be great. And yeah,
even
the Yankees
have had some bad stretches. Red Sox.
And I think the Red Sox had an incredibly impressively bad stretch that I think we forget about now because they've had so many wins, but they didn't win for 80 years. And I mean, I hope that it doesn't take us that long, but there will be Tigers championships in our future, and the team will probably not resemble the one that we have right now at all. But I mean, the Tigers made it through 2003. We can make it through 2019 and 2020. And if you as a fan don't think you can weather a bad season, there are lots of other great teams that you can pick up a cap for and root for and still love baseball. Or you can just decide to weather the storm and love the Tigers because they're the Tigers.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think there are certainly people who just will never root for another team. I mean, I'm kind of that way. Maybe it's just the era I grew up in, like, you don't really, you know, pick more than one team, you know, and this is where I grew up. So it's all, you know, everybody grew up wearing the old English D everywhere we went. Like, it's just kind of ingrained. I would never really pick another team. You know, I kind of rode the Astros train the past 2 years a little bit because Verlander is there. And that was really fun in 2017, especially. But, you know, I'm just not, no matter who else I would root for, it would never, no matter what I did, it would never feel the way it will feel for the Tigers to win a World Series. To a certain degree, even if I tried to jump onto another bandwagon, my heart would never be 100% in it. It just wouldn't. So, you know, for people like us, for people like you, Robert, boycotting just doesn't do a lot of good. You know, I would just say, as always, like, baseball is supposed to be fun, so have fun. If it's not fun for you to go to games because you're going to be furious that they haven't spent money like this whole year, even when you know we're past the point where anyone spends money and you just kind of have to accept what you've got, you know, then yeah, you know, maybe just take a year or two away, you know, develop another hobby, you know, take up yoga.
Watch the minor league teams.
Yeah.
What an idea. Like, if you get MILB TV.
Well, the problem is Robert already does this, but yes, this is good advice.
Then this is advice for others, but I mean, if the big team is very disheartening to you, watch the future guys.
Yep, exactly. That's the thing you do, and you know, we're already at a point where, like, the Tigers drafts are, you know, I mean, the baseball draft is not that important compared to the football draft as far as, like, oh, this guy's got the number one pick, and this team's, you know, second and third. it doesn't matter as much as that, but you know, it is somewhat more important, or at least interesting. So if you want to watch college baseball, start prepping for the draft, that kind of thing. I know our boy Jacob Markle, that's probably completely what he's obsessed with already, because college baseball, Division I baseball is getting underway. So there's other, you know, there's other forms of baseball to enjoy. And if the Tigers are really making you just hate your life, then first of all, like, you should probably just back away a little bit in general. But second of all, like, you know, I'm not going to go. It's already happened. You know, like, I went to Comerica Park 10 times, I think, in 2016. 2017, after the sell-off, I went one more time that year, but it was more like six. Last year, I only went to 5 games. And 5 games is probably about what's going to happen this year. You know, I'll go to Toledo for a few. I'll probably try to make a weekend trip to Erie at some point. And I go out to West Michigan already a decent amount anyway. So I'll go see some games there. But, you know, you just kind of work it. Like, this isn't going to be the year I go crazy and buy expensive seats, you know, at Comerica Park and go, you know, go crazy and buy a foam finger and all this bullshit. Like, this isn't the year for that. This is the year for, like, just lay back in the cut. You know, but show up late, get some enjoy scalp beer. Tickets outside. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing I would suggest is, if you're not feeling the Tigers this season, the Athletic, I don't know if he's doing it for the Athletic or for Baseball Pro, but Sungmin Kim is a fantastic baseball writer who is really focusing on the Korean Baseball League right now and doing regular posts about it. I think for the Athletic, very much worth investing in Athletic membership just to kind of follow him. He does whole things on how to watch Korean games, follows the whole Korean like circuit. He's a regular Yankees writer as well, so that's kind of interesting, but he really covers it all, and he was a FanGraphs resident writer, really tremendous stuff. So I would say, if the regular baseball season is getting you down, maybe follow him and maybe find some foreign leagues to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, more and more Americans are starting to, like, lean over into soccer or football, and, like, that sort of, to call it, like, exotic or like, oh, the pageantry of other leagues can come across, like, very xenophobic. So I don't mean to do so, but it is just really interesting to see the game you love in a different setting, with, like, a different way kind of being a fan. Players have a different way of expressing themselves. They play the game a little bit different. It could be really fascinating. You know, we all just kind of went crazy a couple years ago with the World Baseball Classic, because mm-hmm. it was just such a ludicrous breath of fresh air to see everybody kind of like playing for their country and sort of in the spirit that the game is played in their country to some degree. And that was super fun. So,
okay, so I clarified it. I checked his Twitter. It's for Baseball Pro. So B Pro, I think, is actually free. Am I making
no,
this? No, you have to pay for it. No, never remember Baseball America or Baseball Pro as it costly, but Baseball Pro Prospectus did actually go, they're the ones who unionized and took over their own thing, aren't they? So that's pretty cool. I mean, support B-Pro. And the B-Pro Annual just came out this week.
Yes, and the B-Pro Annual.
Nick Offerman wrote one of the essays this year, which is amazing. The Cubs won. Yeah.
Yeah.
And FanGraphs regular writer that we are both a fan of, Cheryl Ring, has an essay in there this year. So that's pretty rad.
Yeah, and you know, there's a bunch of writers there I like, and you know, guys like Harry Pavlidis, who've been there, and Jeffrey Paternostro, like some of the old school guys who've been there a long time, have always been really good. And our boy Jacob Markle writes for them, and does some coverage of the Midwest League as well. So he's got his little toe in their waters over there. So yeah, we're fans of B-Pro. I wish it was a tiny bit cheaper, but I did subscribe this year in solidarity to their takeover. From their corporate masters.
I might have to.
There's a lot of great writing over at Baseball Prospectus. There's just also a lot of, for my taste, like, overwrought writing. Like, there's a few too many, like, failed English majors who probably wanted to win a Nobel Prize in something else. And so they're trying to find a way to just mention baseball in some of these articles and write about what they wanted to write about. And some of that can be great, too, because, I mean, there's a lot of talented writers over there, even the ones I'm making fun of a little bit. So, you know, it's been cool. It's been cool having that subscription. A lot of the statistical analysis that Baseball Prospectus does has been cutting edge all along. Like, a lot of the stuff you hear us talk about as far as sabermetrics goes, a lot of that stuff was pioneered by B-Pro people. So, and a lot of them work for MLB teams now as well. So, that's a good place to go if you're kind of looking for some of the cutting edge coverage. You know, you have BPro and Fangraphs together, you're in real good shape. So that concludes that infomercial based on Robert James' question about whether or not he should boycott the Tigers. That'll teach you to ask me that question ever again.
Also, get paid for our Patreon. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
If we're saying give money to people, maybe give some to us.
Yeah, you really should just go to patreon.com/blessyouboys and just throw a couple bucks our way a month. That would really help us this whole season long.
It
really
kind of gives us a little invigorating content.
Exactly, it gives you a little bit.
So you can hear us talk about a little bit of fuel. We need baseball back very badly, you guys.
We do. I would like to see some games, and I would also like to see Casey Mize's new. I'm going to call it curveball, but he calls it slider. So we'll see. Tomato, etc. But yeah, we probably do need baseball to get back, but you can't get this content anywhere. You don't get serial killers and like the history of migration patterns, you know, according to latitude versus longitude.
Epidemiology the goods.
Can't just stagger out on the street corner and ask for this kind of content.
We're highly educated people. You guys are lucky. Right. You're so lucky to have us every week.
My nose is very high right now. Yes, I'm very erudite and quite a reader as well.
You're so smart. We use big words. We're so good at our jobs.
And we're unpaid baseball writers, essentially. Semi-pro.
Yeah, semi-pro. Like, you know, yeah.
We're like the independent leagues of baseball writing is how I like to think about it. We're playing for...
For the American Association.
What's that team that...
That's the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Gold Eyes are an American Association team. So yeah, we're like the American Association of professional baseball writing.
Exactly. Think of us that way.
Not like the BBWAA, but we are the IBWA.
Right. We're kind of like the brain trust, you know? Like, we just do our little thing and nobody thinks that much of us. But then, you know, like, highly important beat writers and players and coaches talk to us behind the scenes and ask our advice about things. And, you know... We don't need to brag about these kind of things, you know? It's no big deal. It's all just love of the game, baby. All right, the final question that we have is...
Oh, God, there's more after that.
Yeah, there's one more. It's, what does the Blue Jays holding on to Vlad Jr. in the minors say about the state of baseball? The fact that they're going to game his service time. Will we see a strike soon, and will that affect the Tigers? How do you feel about the Blue Jays seem to have announced that they, you know...
It's...
How do you put it diplomatically that
they're gaming the service time? That really is the most polite way to say it. But I mean, I think all teams are kind of bad for this. I don't think it's out of the norm. I think it's annoying as hell in that for two reasons. I think it's super annoying in that I want to see Vlad Jr. play at a big league level. Everybody wants to see this.
And he's obviously ready.
Come on, just let us see the guy play. And the longer they hold him in the fucking minors, the longer it takes for Wander Franco to get up to the number one in a lot of these lists, which irritates me as a Rays writer.
Oh, yeah. God damn. He looks good.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's a hell of a prospect.
I'm so excited for Wander Franco. And he's a wee baseball baby.
I know.
He's going to be in the minors for a while still because he's literally a minor. I think he might actually.
Yeah. He's 18 or 19. Yeah. He and Willie Adamas, not Willie Adamas, that was the earlier one. He and Wenzel Perez are the same age. And so, like, it'll be interesting seeing that vintage of, like, the next level of shortstop come up. But man, yeah, well, Franco, I mean, just looks like the absolute guys. Like, cream, I mean, of the class.
You got to look at the young ones, like your Acuna Juniors. Young guys come up all the time. And that's the other thing is you see these young guys come up. If the Braves can play that guy like Acuna Jr., why the hell can't the Blue Jays give me Vlad?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, of course, the funny thing is that the Braves did the same thing and gamed Acuna, too.
They did. It's annoying every time anybody does it. And I get why they're doing it. You want the most bang for your buck. But then you end up with issues like we have now with these guys all hitting the free agent market at certain ages because they've had their clocks gained. And... I'm so sick of this fucking off season. Pardon my French. Adam, I think that was your two. I think I dropped my two F bombs. I waited until the end.
Yeah, saved it till deep in the podcast.
I was pretty good this time around. My apologies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that thing, like you said, like everyone else has done it. And so I can't particularly single out the Blue Jays for doing it. it just sucks, and it's going to have to, and really there's no way to address it other than the next collective bargaining agreement. And
oh, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, I mean, that's shaping up to be kind of ugly, but I also think that, well, my general take on this is that, yeah, things are headed in a very bad direction. The top free agents are going to get kind of what we all expected them to get, but that group of guys who hits free agency like normal when they're 28, 29, 30, 31, not only are those guys not getting the amounts of money that they used to get, the terms that they're getting are not for 4 or 5 years anymore. It's all 1 year deals, maybe 2 years. And the problem is that it starts compounding on itself. And that's what we've really seen, I think, in particular this year, is when you start seeing the same guys that hit free agency like a year ago or 2 years ago for no money are back again. And it just starts to create this clog where the teams who are looking for someone, all of a sudden they have double the options and they're all cheap, you know. Mm-hmm. That's like Brian Dozier, like getting picked up for $2 million, you know, not a great player anymore, but still like a very solid veteran player. And there's just a host of those guys who are just going really cheap. And it's only going to get worse for that same reason, because everybody who sees sign for the next couple weeks for, you know, 1 year, just $1 million, $2 million, they're all going to be right back in the pool with everybody else next year. So, yeah, it's just not going to get any better. I hope things don't come to the point where a strike is needed. I do hope that the owners kind of recognize that the only way to kind of get around that at this point is to kind of make all players Super 2 eligible earlier.
Yeah.
Where, you know, or maybe like your second year, you know, you're arbitration eligible. So they gain your service time, fine. And then you play your first full season, but then that second season comes up and you're already able to go to arbitration, get a fair hearing, and make more than the league minimum. And that something like that's going to have to be the way this starts. That's like the starting point. I think, I don't know, because boy, the owners have acted, and just the way Manfred has talked about it has been really kind of obtuse and disingenuous in a lot of his comments about it. But I have to think that somewhere deep down they recognize that they're really trying to cash in. Like, this is really like a smash and grab kind of run the past year or two, and that's probably going to continue up until the CBA. And hopefully at that point they recognize that they've got to put the brakes on, because baseball is making a hell of a lot of money. Players are making a hell of a lot of money compared to what they made in 1993 and 94. There's just a lot more at stake. And so I'm hopeful that they will work this out. And maybe, you know, to some degree, we're just seeing sort of a natural cycle over the past 2 years. It does kind of feel like you need to see, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years and then kind of look at it. Like, overall, what's getting paid in free agency? You know, is it declining? Has it just stayed the same? Or maybe do the next 2 seasons kind of, like, start to rebuild some of that value? Yeah, we'll just kind of have to see. But, yeah, right now it's not looking very good. It's not looking great.
Yeah, it's not a promising outlook at the moment, but you're right. I think 2 seasons, I was hoping it would be a one and done kind of, okay, this is a fluky weird off season and everything is back to normal. And this season we're getting it again. So I think you're right. 1 year, 2 years is not necessarily a trend, but I think we're pretty close to seeing it become one.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, you just see, like, some of the commentary from some of the, you know, like, the little bit that owners have had to say, or GMs, and what Manfred has to say. You know, I mean, they never say what they're thinking, obviously. They never come right out with anything, but, it really feels like they're trying, at least right now, to kind of brush it aside. And we just see more and more players, like, getting very vocal on Twitter. There was a long thread with, Adam Wainwright. Long time, you know, very highly respected starting pitcher for the Cardinals, won a couple World Series, you know, like when you see guys like that really weigh in and put together like a 20 tweet thread all about, you know, how they're feeling right now, you know, this is weighing on everybody's mind. So yeah, it's out there and we will continue to cover it with some degree of irritation, but, yeah, hopefully things start to change, because otherwise, yeah, we're kind of heading toward a real impasse.
Yeah, it's going to get pretty ugly at the next CBA, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Tony Clark did finally do the right thing and at least hire some fairly capable labor lawyers to handle negotiations, which is smart. So, yeah, hopefully both sides kind of know they're in for a fight and do what they can to avoid it. So that's about it for this week's show. Please head over to the website, blushyboys.com. Take a look out there. You can see my article about the remaining free agents. Kyle Yost took a look at predicting the opening day roster. Ashley covered a bunch of the news recently. The Franklin Perez stomach issue, whatever's going on there.
Yeah, we'll hopefully have updates for that soon.
Yeah, hopefully that will not be a big problem. And yeah, the prospect list is kind of starting to wind down. We had Bo Burrows at 7 yesterday, Kristen Stewart at 6 today. I will post Franklin Perez, who's our number 5 prospect, tomorrow. And then you'll see Matt Manning, Daz Cameron, Isaac Paredes, and Casey Mize all written up probably by the end of the week. So look forward to those things. Keep an eye out for Ashley's YouTube channel and follow her at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter. And any kind of ETA, like sometime in the next week?
The preview post will probably go up in the next couple days. I won't be launching the actual channel until probably the second or third week in March, just because I'm going down to Florida next week and into the first week of March. So I don't want to start going with things until I can actually be a little bit ahead on the filming. The first two episodes are done, though, and then when I get back, I'm hoping to film 4 or so more and then get them out.
Sweet. Okay.
So it'll be, it'll be every Tuesday.
If you want me to, like, embarrass myself demonstrating anything from pitching by video, and then you can use that.
Oh, I might get some info on some pitching grips. I think that would be a great episode.
Yeah, we can do something like that.
Yeah, and I'm way ahead of myself. I ordered, I think, a bag of 12 baseballs the other day or something.
I was so jealous that you had the excuse to order a whole bunch of baseball equipment. That was when I really realized how genius this idea
was.
Like,
I ordered.
You're going to write off baseballs next year in your taxes.
I am. I 100% am. I ordered a bag of 12 baseballs and a Rosen bag. So, and I am this close to ordering the actual ball mud rub. The very specific. And I'm going to order some. It's $25 just for a small personal use container, though, which is not cheap. So I am going to have some for when I do my episode about the literal baseball.
What the hell is that called, though? It's Lena Blackburn, right?
Yeah.
Baseball mud.
And it is a very specific type of rubbing mud. And I want to get into the whole thing about, like, the process that they have to get through to get the balls ready for use and what considers a dead ball. And then I'm going to take a whole ball apart. And that's the episode I'm most excited to do.
I'm really stoked about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll be a lot of fun.
You haven't ordered a war stick bat yet?
No.
I keep thinking about
it. I don't know
that
I can officially write off a war stick bat because it's not like I'm going
to. Bloody expensive, too.
I'm not going to take a war stick bat apart. I mean, I have a cast off Louisville Slugger I bought at the Louisville Slugger factory that I could probably do something with, but I'd feel kind of guilty about it.
Oh, you should cork it. We could talk about how to drill into it and cork it.
No.
Get someone with a nice drill to.
But right. I think between it and the other Louisville Slugger bat I have, I can probably do a little bit of a thing on cup balancing at some point. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, cheating in baseball would make for a great couple episodes at some point along the way, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally like I picked up a couple of my books that I have on kind of like the general breakdown of baseball, and I think I now have about 150 episodes worth of content ready to go. So it's going to go for a long while, as long as I can keep up a good schedule on it.
And that's kind of the thing, right? Is to sort of, like when you start a YouTube channel, you need to like have a lot of content at first, get a bunch of people to subscribe and kind of build it up in bulk, right? Like a bunch of the time here and there.
That's the myth I really want to bust going into this. I will not be making any money on this for the first year.
But like, just to build up your subscribers.
YouTube bases everything on the hours of video watched. So it's a minimum subscriber number, I think. And also, I think you have to hit something like 8,000 hours of watched video before you start making any money at all. So I'm not anticipating this becoming some sort of money-making venture on my part. I am literally just doing this for love of the game. So if anybody...
Oh, you know what? Mark Roush just posted in our little Twitter chat, like, oh yeah, I threw a little bit of money Ashley's way toward that
sure
YouTube
did.
Thing too. It seems like we all tried to help out the wonderfulness
of Ashley. It was incredible. So many people did. And It is still going till the end of the month, so it's my pinned tweet still. So if you listen to this and want to throw, I am wildly in debt on my credit card now, thanks to some of the purchases I've had to make for it. But that's so it goes when you're feeling very passionate about a project, and I'm really excited about this. So
yeah, me too. Yep, really stoked to see what you come up with here. And yeah, the first couple episodes all sound like just like perfectly on point. So yeah, this sounds really, really cool.
And it's all me kind of feeling it out too, because it's very weird sitting in a room on your own with lights pointed at you and talking at a camera. And I should probably make scripts because I am so lost. Like, you know what you're talking about until you have to say it to a camera and you're like, wait, what teams are in the NL West?
Right. Or you just catch yourself like, oh, am I a crazy person? Is it better if I like pretend I'm talking to one of my cats or dogs, or is it better if I don't?
Well, then I drift and I try to talk to the monitor, but it's just far enough off from the lens that it looks like I'm talking to someone off screen. So that it's a whole debacle. Anyway, we'll see what happens. It'll be fun.
Yeah, each of these little media steps are kind of their own little thing. Like, it took a while to get used to doing radio. I'm sure it was similar for you, just to, like, getting used to, like, the flow of listening and then talking and that, like, yeah, kind of blurring the lines and stuff. So, yeah, there's always a learning curve. But, yeah, super stoked to see what you come up with. So, please follow Ashley at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter and be on the lookout for her YouTube channel, which we will announce profusely here on Twitter and on the site. And read our stuff at blessyouboys.com. And we will be back, I think, next week to talk to you some more. And hopefully good things will happen. Like Franklin Perez gets, you know, his tummy feels better and he comes out throwing 95 and looking like a monster. That's what I want.
That's what we all want.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We will see you all next week. Thanks a lot for joining us. Have a good night, Ashley.
Good night.